if you will, a group of soldiers in a barracks. Perhaps 100 or so soldiers, those would be under the rule of a centurion. Doing what soldiers do, waiting. They're sitting around waiting for something to happen, kind of hoping something does happen, but at the same time hoping nothing happens. They're there trying to entertain themselves, maybe sharpening their swords, polishing them, keeping their uniforms clean, trying to keep themselves entertained while they wait. And as they're there waiting and milling about, their centurion walks in, their commander. He needs 12 volunteers. They all know that this is not something they particularly want to volunteer. So they do what all of us do when somebody needs volunteers. They look down. They look away. They look distracted. One guy suddenly develops a terrible limp. Anything to avoid this detail. Nobody volunteers. So he does what any good commander does. He voluntolds. He picks 12 men who are going to carry out this task. 3 squads of 4. Given the task and the charge to carry out an execution. Now, even to the most hardened of Roman soldiers, this is a horrible assignment. This isn't just an execution. This is torture. One of the most violent ways of killing another person that humanity has come up with, they are charged with. And even to men who are hardened soldiers who have killed many in combat, it is a different thing to kill a man who, even no matter what he has done, is defenseless. And your job is to torture and to make him suffer. Nobody wants this detail. 4 soldiers assigned to each person to be executed, and they carry out their task. We're told that as they carry out this task, and as Jesus and 2 other men are there on the cross suffering, they look and they see their clothes. The typical Jewish person wore 5 articles of clothing: a turban, shoes, a girdle, a tunic, and an outer cloak. 4 of those items they're able to divide amongst themselves. But there's 1 left. We're told it's a tunic and undergarment. And we're told it's woven together as 1 piece. And you can imagine one of the soldiers saying, hey, let's just rip this thing up. Each of us can have a share of it. And others say, wait a minute, what are you doing? This is an expensive piece of cloth. We don't get paid that much for this job. And as kind of dark as it might be to think about wanting to wear the clothes of a dead man, people typically didn't have more than 1 or 2 changes of clothes. And something like a tunic woven together could be several days' worth of wages to be able to purchase it. This is something viable. They don't want to tear it up. So instead, they decide what they're going to do is they're going to cast lots. They're going to throw dice. They're going to play a game to decide who gets it. And there at the foot of the cross, below 3 men who are suffering and dying, they begin to play a game. And you can picture them kind of joking around with each other as they throw the dice. Maybe 1 man loses. He goes, wait a minute, 2 out of 3. They're like, sure, why not? And they laugh about it. Just make the game go on longer. They become indifferent to everything that's happening around them as they play there at the cross for this man's clothes. Crucifixion wasn't a short death. It was, by its design, intended to be a long, drawn-out death. Many actually died of thirst. They would hang there for days, 2 and 3 days, until their body finally shut down in agony. And as soldiers, their charge is to sit there through the whole process, to listen to it, to listen to the cries, the agony, the pleas. And they'd heard it time and time again. As they're there, casting their lots, playing their games, joking, bartering over this man's clothes, we're told that there are people passing by. Some maybe just trying to get to Jerusalem or get in and out, and they're kind of shielding their eyes. They don't want to see this, but they're forced to see it at the crossroads. Others have come to mock. Religious leaders have come. He saved others. Why can't he save himself? And they taunt and they mock him. Perhaps even Pilate himself, the Roman governor, comes out. It seems to sense that he has come out, and the religious leaders are having an argument with him because he's put on the sign, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, and they're like, stop, don't say he was King of the Jews. Say that he said that he was King of the Jews. Pilate, new name. Pilate finally gets a backbone. Says, what I've written, I have written. And as this whole scene goes on, they cast dice. and they play a game for his clothes, indifferent to the suffering. We're told there's others there as well. Mary, his mother. Mary Magdalene, the women who followed and supported him, are there as well at the cross. It's said that there is no cries quite like the cries and as piercing as painful as the cries of a mother who is sitting at her child's execution. Regardless of why their child is there, she is there at the cross, witnessing her son being executed, crying for him. Church tradition, we have no idea if it's true or not, but church tradition, there are some in the church who have said that perhaps Mary herself wove the tunic. It wouldn't have been that unheard of for that garment to have been woven before he was sent out. Either way, it's his clothes that they are bartering for. So there at the cross, as women mourn, as cries are heard in weeping, they cast lots. They play a game for his clothes. They are indifferent to it all. We've become indifferent. We've become asleep to human suffering. There is violence that is around us every single day, and we block it out. There is suffering that is around us, and we block it out. Unborn children die every day. But it's become so commonplace that we don't even think about that it's happening. We play games at the cross, indifferent to suffering. It wasn't that long ago that the media cycle was driven by the suffering of those in North Carolina. How many of you thought about that recently? They're still suffering down there from the floods and the hurricane. But life moves on. It just kind of continues on. The crisis shifted to forest fires in California and the Palisades. You know, those homes are still burnt down. People still don't have a place to live. But we've moved on. A few years ago, we felt this tremendous anxiety and fear as we saw Russia invade the sovereign nation of Ukraine, the breadbasket of Europe, what is often called the Bible Belt of Europe, the place, the center of Christianity in Europe, is invaded, and we prayed and we pleaded. The war still rages, but we have moved on. We have become so used to it. Wasn't that common that long ago on social media? There would be some kind of a clip, a video, or something would get posted, and what would we do? We'd all kind of get welled up into rage. And we'd post, and we'd change our social media pictures, and we'd wrap frames around it, and we'd argue. And a week later, we'd be on to something else. And we become so immune and so normal to it that now when those things come up, most of us just kind of scroll by. We don't have the energy anymore. Life kind of goes on. There's an old song. It talks about, it says, just it's just the way it is. It speaks in the song, it talks about the color bar and racism and segregation. And it says, well, it's just the way that it is. And it's how we often live our lives. It's just how it is. We become so used to it. We become so indifferent to what is happening around us that all we can say is, it's just how it is. I can't really do anything about it. And we are like men casting dice at the cross with our ears and our eyes closed to what is happening around us. Jesus tells the story of a farmer who sows seeds. And he sows the seeds and it begins to sprout and to grow up. But he says, thorns come and begin to swarm and capture it. And it chokes it out. And he says, the thorns are the cares of this life. And the cares of life choke out the life in there. For many of us, it is those cares of life. The practicality of the value of a man's garments. He's not going to need them anyways. The needs and the cares of life take precedence and become indifferent to what is happening. It's striking that we're told that Mary is there at the cross. Certainly they would have known just by the sounds that this woman is his mother. But nobody says, maybe we should give the tunic to her. I mean, we might keep the four for us. Nobody even offers to give the dead man's clothes to his mother. They're too valuable. Just how it is. And so they cast lots. They play a game at the foot of the cross for the clothes of Jesus. Another time we're told that as Jesus is traveling, there is a large crowd pressed against him. And as he's going through this crowd and people are pressing against him, there is a woman who for 12 years had been suffering from a condition of bleeding. And she says, if I could just perhaps touch the hem of his garment, if I could force my way through this one who has been excluded and ostracized, who has suffered for 12 years, if I could just perhaps stretch my way through and to touch the hem of his garment, maybe I would be healed. And she does. She presses through. She touches his garment. Jesus stops the crowd and said, who touched me? But he's like, are you out of your mind? The crowd is shoving against you. But he knows one woman in faith has reached out and touched him. Mark tells us she wasn't the only one. In fact, many in the crowds, he says, would come and they would press. There were many who would come to Jesus. They would reach out. And just by faith, they would reach and they would touch his garment. And they would be healed. These are the same garments these soldiers are there at the cross playing a game and gambling for. They don't even realize what is in their hands and what they are playing. It's an interesting question. What if? What if one of the soldiers had said, this man, these garments, people used to come and to touch them, and because they touched them, they were healed. I've got an aunt, she's sick. Maybe if I were to just take this garment to her and touch her. We know it wasn't the garment that did the healing. It was the faith in Jesus Christ. It was the faith in Jesus, that man now whose cross they gamble at his feet. But in their hands, they hold what was the means of life for so many. And they gamble it away, not even knowing what they have. Jesus says to us, he speaks to his disciples, and as he's preparing him for his death, and they're wondering what life is going to be like on the other side when he's gone. They wonder what this is going to be like, and Jesus is trying to get them ready for it. He tells them and he promises them that they are going to receive the Holy Spirit. And when the Holy Spirit comes, he says, you will do even greater things than these. We could take a moment here and think of all the things that Jesus did. There were dead people who were raised to life. People who were blind, born blind, and they gained sight. The paralyzed were able to walk. Those trapped and possessed by demons were set free. Even greater things than these, he says, these are just the beginning. And we, his church, hold his Spirit in our hands. And we are like men in a cross playing games. And we don't even realize the power that we have. We don't even realize the power that is at work in each one of us. And the promise that has been given to each one of us. Another time, Jesus will tell a story. He'll say there'll come a day of judgment, and there'll be two groups that will come before Jesus. One group will come before Jesus, and he will say to them, I was hungry, and you gave me nothing. I was thirsty, and you didn't give me a drink. I was naked, and you didn't give me clothes. I was in prison, and you didn't visit me. The cares of this life were too much. And they will look up to Jesus and they'll say, when did we ever see any of this? Because if we'd seen it, Jesus, we certainly would have done it. But we were indifferent and we were too busy. We didn't see it. And he says, depart from me. But he says, there's another group that will come. And I'll say the same thing to them. Once I was thirsty, but you gave me something to drink. I was hungry and you gave me food. I was naked and you gave me clothes, and I was in prison and you came and visited me. Suffering was all around us, but we were not indifferent to it. Instead, we brought life, the life that is the Spirit of God that is at work in each one of us. And they will say, when did we ever see any of this? We didn't even notice it ourselves. He said, but whenever you did it for those who were around you, you did it for me. The Spirit that is at work in each one of us. The power of God to change. It is in our hands. And we so often become indifferent to it. But it's not even just the power of God to help those out there. It's also the power of God to change us. In Romans chapter 7, Paul, it's a famous passage, many of us know, Paul, he speaks and he writes to the church in Rome and he says, there are things that I do not want to do, but what I want to do, I don't do. And he goes on and on about this struggle and this battle that he has. And we are tempted to look at it and to say, that's just the way it is. It's just a struggle. It's just a normal human experience. But Paul says, no. Don't you realize? Wake up. The Spirit of God is in you. He says, thanks be to God. I once was like that. I once was entrapped in sin. But today, now, because of the Spirit that is at work in you, you have life. Now you have been set free from the power of sin that once chained you. Now you can live. Wake up and open your eyes to what is in you, to the Spirit that is at work. For he brings us life. He sets us free from the power of sin and death. And he gives us hope. I wasn't going to go here, but I'm going to go ahead and go here because we had a conversation during our group beforehand, which you're welcome to join us any Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. Some of us need a defining mark in a moment that we know that once we were dead and now we are alive to Christ. We need to know that we are awake and the Spirit has changed and transformed us. Martin Luther, the guy who nailed 95 theses on the wall and we say started the Protestant Reformation. He's a man who also suffered with tremendous darkness and depression. And he tells the story of one day he was in his study, and as he's there by himself, he said the darkness began to move across the wall. And he felt it begin to consume and surround him. And those were the days people had inkwells that they would dip a quill into and write. And he said he picked up his inkwell, and he threw it across the wall, and he smashed it on the wall. And he shouted at the darkness, I have been baptized. And the darkness left. See, baptism is a reminder to us. It's an awakening to us. That once we were dead, once our life was defined by things that I do, I do not want to do, but what I want to do, I don't do. But now, because of the Spirit of God that is at work in each one of us, that same power that allowed a woman to touch a garment and be healed, that same power that Jesus says, you will do even greater things than all the things I have done. I fed 5,000 people with a few bread and fish. It's just the beginning of those you will feed. That same power has raised you to new life. You can say to the darkness, I am no longer what I once was. There is that moment I can say, I am baptized. I have been raised to new life. I am not what I once was. It's time for us to wake up, to no longer be asleep or indifferent to what the Spirit is doing in each one of us, no longer to be asleep and indifferent to what is around us. Wake up and find new life. Let's pray together.